Chapter 31. Tinglings of pleasure pervaded Caroline's spasmodic little frame as she journeyed down with Ned to the places he had left 2 or 3 years before, in silence and under a cloud. To return to where she had once been despised, a smiling London wife with a distinct London accent, was a triumph which the world did not witness every day. The train did not stop at the petty roadside station that lay nearest to Stickleford, and the trio went on to Casterbridge. Ned thought it a good opportunity to make a few preliminary inquiries for employment at workshops in the borough where he had been known, and feeling cold from her journey, and it being dry underfoot and only dusk as yet, with a moon on the point of rising, Caroline and her little girl walked on toward Stickleford, leaving Ned to follow at a quicker pace, and pick her up at a certain halfway house, widely known as an inn. The woman and child pursued the well-remembered way comfortably enough, though they were both becoming wearied. In the course of 3 miles they had passed heedless William's Pond, the familiar landmark by Bloom's End, and were drawing near the quiet woman inn, a lone roadside hostel on the lower verge of the Egdon Heath, since and for many years abolished. In stepping up towards it, Caroline heard more voices within than had formerly been customary at such an hour, and she learned that an auction of fat stock had been held near the spot that afternoon. The child would be the better for a rest as well as herself, she thought, and she entered. The guests and customers overflowed into the passage, and Caroline had no sooner crossed the threshold than a man whom she remembered by sight came forward with glass and mug in his hands towards a friend leaning against the wall, but, seeing her, very gallantly offered her a drink of the liquor, which was gin and beer hot, pouring her out a tumblerful and saying, in a moment or two, "Surely, 'tis little Caroline spent that was down at Stickleford?" She assented, and, though she did not exactly want this beverage, she drank it since it was offered, and her entertainer begged her to come in farther and sit down. Once within the room she found that all the persons present were seated close against the walls, and there being a chair vacant she did the same. An explanation of their position occurred the next moment. In the opposite corner stood Mop, rossening his bow and looking just the same as ever. The company had cleared the middle of the room for dancing, and they were about to dance again. As she wore a veil, to keep off the wind, she did not think he had recognized her, or could possibly guess the identity of the child, and to her satisfied surprise she found that she could confront him quite calmly, mistress of herself in the dignity her London life had given her. Before as he had quite emptied her glass the dance was called, the dancers formed in 2 lines, the music sounded, and the figure began. Then matters changed for Caroline. A tremor quickened itself to life in her, and her hand so shook that she could hardly set down her glass. It was not the dance nor the dancers, but the notes of that old violin which thrilled the London wife, these having still all the witchery that as he had so well known of yore, and under which as he had used to lose her power of independent will. How it all came back! There was the fiddling figure against the wall, the large, oily, mop-like head of him, and beneath the mop the face with closed eyes. After the first moments of paralyzed reverie the familiar tune in the familiar rendering made her laugh and shed tears simultaneously. Then a man at the bottom of the dance, whose partner had dropped away, stretched out his hand and beckoned to her to take the place. She did not want to dance, she entreated by signs, to be left where she was, but she was entreating of the tune and its player, rather than of the dancing man. The saltatory tendency which the fiddler and his cunning instrument had ever been able to start in her was seizing Caroline just as it had done in earlier years, possibly assisted by the gin and beer hot. Tired as she grasped her little girl by the hand, and plunging in at the bottom of the figure, whirled about with the rest. She found that her companions were mostly people of the neighboring hamlets and farms, Bloom's End, Millstock, Lewgate, and elsewhere, and by degrees she was recognized as she convulsively danced on, wishing that mop would cease and let her heart rest from the aching he caused, and her feet also. After long and many minutes the dance ended, when she was urged to fortify herself with more gin and beer, which she did, feeling very weak, and overpowered with hysteric emotion. She refrained from unveiling, to keep Mop in ignorance of her presence, if possible. Several of the guests having left, Caroline hastily wiped her lips, and also turned to go. But, according to the account of some who remained, at that very moment a five-handed reel was proposed, in which two or three begged her to join. She declined on the plea of being tired, and having to walk to Stickleford, when Mop began aggressively tweedling my fancy lad, apostrophe in D major, as the air to which the reel was to be footed. He must have recognized her, though she did not know it, for it was the strain of all seductive strains which she was least able to resist the one he had played, when she was leaning over the bridge at the date of their first acquaintance. Caroline stepped despairingly into the middle of the room with the other four. Reels were resorted to hereabouts at this time by the more robust spirits, for the reduction of superfluous energy which the ordinary figure dances were not powerful enough to exhaust. As everybody knows, or does not know, the five reelers stood in the form of a cross, the reel being performed by each line of three alternately, the persons who successively came to the middle place dancing in both directions. Caroline soon found herself in this place, the axis of the whole performance, and could not get out of it, the tune turning into the first part without giving her opportunity. And now she began to suspect that Mop did know her, and was doing this on purpose, though whenever she stole a glance at him his closed eyes betokened obliviousness to everything outside his own brain. She continued to wend her way through the figure of eight that was formed by her course, the fiddler introducing into his notes the wild and agonizing sweetness of a living voice in one too highly wrought, its pathos running high and running low in endless variation, projecting through her nerves excruciating spasms, a sort of blissful torture. The room swam, the tune was endless. And in about a quarter of an hour the only other woman in the figure dropped out exhausted, and sank panting on a bench. The reel instantly resolved itself into a four-handed one. Caroline would have given anything to leave off, but as he had, or fancied she had, no power, while Mop played such tunes, and thus another 10 minutes slipped by, a haze of dust now clouding the candles, the floor being of stone, sanded. Then another dancer fell out one of the men, and went into the passage, in a frantic search for liquor. To turn the figure into a three-handed reel was the work of a second, Mop modulating at the same time into the fairy dance, apostrophe as better suited to the contracted movement, and no less one of those foods of love which, as manufactured by his bow, had always intoxicated her. In a reel for three there was no rest whatever, and 4 or 5 minutes were enough to make her remaining two partners, now thoroughly blown, stamp their last bar, and, like their predecessors, limp off into the next room, to get something to drink. Caroline, half stifled inside her veil, was left dancing alone, the apartment now being empty of everybody save herself, Mop, and their little girl. She flung up the veil, and cast her eyes upon him, as if imploring him to withdraw himself and his acoustic magnetism from the atmosphere. Mop opened one of his own orbs, as though for the first time, fixed it peeringly upon her, and smiling dreamily, threw into his strains the reserve of expression which he could not afford to waste on a big and noisy dance. Crowds of little chromatic subtleties, capable of drawing tears from a statue, proceeded straightway from the ancient fiddle, as if it were dying of the emotion which had been pent up within it ever since its banishment from some Italian city, where it first took shape and sound. There was that in the look of Mop's one dark eye which said, "You cannot leave off, dear, whether you would or no." Apostrophe, apostrophe, and it bred in her a paroxysm of desperation that defied him to tire her down. She thus continued to dance alone, defiantly as she thought, but in truth slavishly and abjectly, subject to every wave of the melody, unprobed by the gimlet-like gaze of her fascinator's open eye, keeping up at the same time a feeble smile in his face, as a feint to signify it was still her own pleasure which led her on. A terrified embarrassment, as to what she could say to him, if she were to leave off, had its unrecognized share in keeping her going. The child, who was beginning to be distressed by the strange situation, came up and said, "Stop, mother, stop, and let's go home." Apostrophe apostrophe as she seized Caroline's hand. Suddenly Caroline sank staggering to the floor, and rolling over on her face, prone she remained. Mop's fiddle thereupon emitted an elfin shriek of finality, stepping quickly down from the 9-gallon beer cask which had formed his rostrum. He went to the little girl, who disconsolately bent over her mother. The guests who had gone into the back room for liquor and change of air, hearing something unusual, trooped back hitherward, where they endeavored to revive poor, weak Caroline by blowing her with the bellows and opening the window. Ned, her husband, who had been detained in Casterbridge, as aforesaid, came along the road at this juncture, and hearing excited voices through the open casement, and to his great surprise, the mention of his wife's name, he entered amid the rest upon the scene. Caroline was now in convulsions, weeping violently, and for a long time nothing could be done with her. While he was sending for a cart, to take her onward to Stickleford, Hipcroft anxiously inquired how it had all happened, and then the assembly explained that a fiddler formerly known in the locality had lately revisited his old haunts, and had taken upon himself without invitation to play that evening at the inn. Ned demanded the fiddler's name, and they said Olamour. "Ah!" apostrophe apostrophe exclaimed Ned, looking round him. "Where is he, and where's my little girl?" Apostrophe apostrophe, Olamour had disappeared, and so had the child. Hipcroft was in ordinary a quiet and tractable fellow, but a determination which was to be feared settled in his face now. "Blast him!" apostrophe he cried. "I'll beat his skull in form, if I swing for it tomorrow." Apostrophe apostrophe, he had rushed to the poker which lay on the hearth, and hastened down the passage, the people following. Outside the house, on the other side of the highway, a mass of dark heathland rose sullenly upward to its not easily accessible interior, a ravined plateau, whereon jutted into the sky, at the distance of a couple of miles, the fir woods of Mistover backed by the Elberry, coppices a place of dantesque gloom at this hour, which would have afforded secure hiding for a battery of artillery, much less a man and a child. Some other men plunged thitherward with him, and more went along the road. They were gone about 20 minutes altogether, returning without result to the inn. Ned sat down in the settle, and clasped his forehead with his hands. "Well, what a fool the man is, and have been all these years, if he thinks the child his, as they do seem to." Apostrophe apostrophe they whispered. "And everybody else knowing otherwise." Apostrophe apostrophe, "No, I don't think 'tis mine." Apostrophe apostrophe cried Ned hoarsely, as he looked up from his hands. "But she is mine, all the same. Han't I nussed her? Han't I fed her and teached her? Han't I played wi' her? Oh, little Carrie gone with that rogue gone." Apostrophe apostrophe, "You han't lost your missus, anyhow," apostrophe they said to console him. "She's throwed up the spirits, and she is feeling better, and she's more to eat than a child that isn't yours." Apostrophe apostrophe, "She isn't. She's not so particular much to me, especially now she's lost the little maid. But Carrie's everything." Apostrophe, "Well, fur like you'll find her tomorrow." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Ah, but shall I? Yet he can't hurt her, surely he can't. Well, how's Caroline now? I am ready. Is the cart here?" Apostrophe, she was lifted into the vehicle, and they sadly lumbered on towards Stickleford. Next day she was calmer, but the fits were still upon her, and her will seemed shattered. For the child she appeared to show singularly little anxiety, though Ned was nearly distracted. It was nevertheless quite expected that the impish mop would restore the lost one after a freak of a day or two, but time went on, and neither he nor she could be heard of, and Hipcroft murmured that perhaps he was exercising upon her some unholy musical charm, as he had done upon Caroline herself. Weeks passed, and still they could obtain no clue either to the fiddler's whereabouts or the girl's, and how he could have induced her to go with him remained a mystery. Then Ned, who had obtained only temporary employment in the neighborhood, took a sudden hatred toward his native district, and a rumor reaching his ears through the police, that a somewhat similar man and child had been seen at a fair near London, he playing a violin, she dancing on stilts, a new interest in the capital took possession of Hipcroft with an intensity which would scarcely allow him time to pack before returning thither. He did not, however, find the lost one, though he made it the entire business of his over hours to stand about in by streets, in the hope of discovering her, and would start up in the night, saying, that rascal's torturing her to maintain him. ... To which his wife would answer peevishly, "Don't ye raff yourself so, Ned. You prevent my getting a bit o' rest. He won't hurt her." ... And fall asleep again. That Carrie and her father had emigrated to America was the general opinion. Mop, no doubt, finding the girl a highly desirable companion, when he had trained her to keep him by her earnings as a dancer. There, for that matter, they may be performing in some capacity now, though he must be an old scamp verging on 80, and she a woman of 40. May 1893. Tradition of 1804. The widely discussed possibility of an invasion of England through a channel tunnel has more than once recalled old Solomon Selby's story to my mind. The occasion on which I numbered myself among his audience was one evening when he was sitting in the yawning chimney corner of the inn kitchen, with some others who had gathered there, and I entered for shelter from the rain. Withdrawing the stem of his pipe from the dental notch in which it habitually rested, he leaned back in the recess behind him, and smiled into the fire. The smile was neither mirthful nor sad, not precisely humorous nor altogether thoughtful. We who knew him recognized it in a moment. It was his narrative smile. Breaking off our few desultory remarks, we drew up closer, and he thus began. "My father, as you mid know, was a shepherd all his life, and lived out by the cove 4 miles yonder, where I was born and lived likewise, till I moved here shortly afore I was married. The cottage that first knew me stood on the top of the down, near the sea. There was no house within a mile and a half of it. It was built o' purpose for the farm shepherd, and had no other use. They tell me that it is now pulled down, but that you can see where it stood by the mounds of earth and a few broken bricks that are still lying about. It was a bleak and dreary place in winter time, but in summer it was well enough, though the garden never came to much, because we could not get up a good shelter for the vegetables and currant bushes, and where there is much wind they don't thrive. Of all the years of my growing up, the ones that bide clearest in my mind were 1803, 1804, and 1805. This was for Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.